Every Friday on the air, horticulture experts from Iowa State give us gardening advice. Every summer, the ISU demonstration farms hold field days so you can see for yourself what's possible in your garden. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Cindy Haynes is an associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. She'll be here today to give us a preview of this summer's field days and talk about some of the research that will be showcased. Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture will also be here. He and Cindy will answer your questions about your yard and garden. 866-780-9100. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and in a few minutes, of course, we'll be answering your questions about your yard and garden. But we're going to start off today with a conversation about an opportunity to see some expert horticulturism. That's not a word, is it, Cindy?
I don't think so, but no. we can make up words. That's perfectly
expert
fine.
Expert horticulture practice in person.
Excellent.
Cindy Haynes is here with me. She's an associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron is also here from Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Cindy, the 2012 field days are coming up. What are these?
Well, the field days are opportunities for the public to come see what we're growing at several different locations across the state. The field days open up these ISU research and demonstration farms for the public to see those things. And they're located at several different places, like I said, across the state. So we have one at Armstrong near Lewis. We have a field day at the Muscatine Island Research Farm in Muscatine or Fruitland. The Hort Station north of Ames near Gilbert. Northern Research Farm in Kanawha, and the Northeast Research Farm in Nashua. And then we started off at the Lyon County Fair in Rock Rapids. So there's probably a research farm or a field day within an hour or two drive of almost everyone in the state.
But every field day is different because all of these farms do different things, right?
They do different things, but they all have the same home demonstration garden plot, essentially, at each of these different farms. But then the farms do other things in addition to. So the horticulture station has horticulture research. The Muscatine Island Research Farm, you see a lot of melons, muskmelons, and sometimes peppers and potatoes. The Armstrong Farm, they do a lot of row crops as well as other, they have a shrub display. And I love the Northern Research Farm because they also have a weed ID section. So they do some extra things in addition to this home demonstration garden that we kind of tour as well.
All right. And we talked with Ajay Nair last week a little bit about the field day at the Horticulture Research Station. So let's talk more about this demonstration garden that's at all the farms. What's in it?
At the features for this year are some augmented sweet corn, which is kind of that hybrid between a super sweet and a sugar-enhanced sweet corn. So we're hoping to have some actual taste testing of sweet corn. So we've picked a couple of different cultivars in three different series so that we should have some ready to taste. We also have foliage plants. We always do some ornamentals as well as some vegetables. And the foliage plants are always look good because they don't rely on flowers. So we have a lot of different kinds of annual plants for foliage and some pretty weird ones there too. We also have a feature on compact plants or space-saving plants because we realize a lot of people don't have the space to grow a huge garden or maybe don't have the space for, you know, a huge muskmelon. So there are some bush types out there that we kind of showcase. And then we always showcase some new and unusual varieties of flowers and vegetables. And that section of the garden is dedicated to those new marigolds, new salvias, even some new tomatoes and cucumbers and muskmelon.
How do you decide what will be in the garden every year?
Richard and I fight.
No,
we don't.
We just look through the catalogs.
Yeah, we do. We look at, and usually Richard says, okay, here's some cool things that I've seen. And I say, oh, well, let's try this as well. So we always have this kind of wish list that we start off with. And then we kind of pare it down to what actually can fit in the garden. So we have to eliminate a few things and put it together kind of by themes. Richard did a great year of pulling a lot of this together for what we selected.
So some of the things, as you mentioned, unusual flowers or vegetables, mm-hmm. are they things that you have tested before, or is some of this experimental for you?
Almost all of it is experimental for us as well. I think we have some new marigolds. They're new cultivars of marigolds. We've selected and tested marigolds in the past, but these are all ones we haven't tested before. Agastache, I don't think we've ever had agastache in the garden, so that's new for us as well. We've got some new portulaca in the garden, or rose moss, that we haven't had in the garden before. So sometimes when we're doing these tests, like on when we do a tomato trial or a pepper trial, we might put in one or two things that we know we've had before in the garden. But with the new and unusual vegetables, they're almost all kind of new to the garden for us, which is nice because they're new in the catalog as well. So that homeowner can come and take a look and say, oh, I saw that in the catalog, and oh, I can taste it here, and oh, yeah, that's something I want to grow next year, or I'm going to pass on it.
Now, some tend to be flops.
Yeah, some tend to be flops,
which
is
why they're new.
Right.
And some tend to be very, very good. So you never know when you see a new variety if it really is going to perform well in your area. Some do, some don't.
Well, and speaking of performing well in your area, are all of these demonstration gardens the same? Because they're in mm-hmm. very different parts of the state.
They're mm-hmm. in very different parts of the state. They're in very different soils, so they might have very different, you know, weather for the year. And that's another nice thing when we go to these different field days. I or Richard or Joe Hannon, who's going to be in Rock Rapids, can kind of talk about, well, how things are doing at the other locations as well. So there's some that we might say, well, really did well in Muscatine in these dry soils, but it was a real, you know, dog and poor performer in a couple of other sites.
But if they perform well in all sites,
then they're pretty tough.
That's a good variety.
Yeah, we give it a good stamp of approval at that point.
Who takes care of all of these gardens?
The farm superintendents and their crew do a great job. So we grow a lot of the plants at the greenhouse or start them, package up the seeds, and then we ship them out in May, early May, to these different farms. They acclimate them, they plant them, they maintain them. We have a really, really cool job because we just get to show up for the field day.
Well, I did a lot of transplanting.
Right, we did a lot, but we help maintain. At the Hort Station, we do a little weeding and we do some planting there. And we regularly check in there just to kind of see how things are going. But all the hands-on labor, the weeding, the watering, it all goes to the farm mm-hmm. Staff.
Well, and with such a very dry year, have you been able to keep up with watering?
Well, at the farm, they have an irrigation system. Mm-hmm. I think this year is one of the first years where we really use the irrigation system. Most years in the past, last 4 or 5 years, we've gotten enough rain here in Gilbert for them to grow well. But this year has been a very, very dry year. But they actually look pretty good because they are being irrigated. So some of the other farms probably aren't being irrigated as much. So there may be some less productive yields in other areas.
Right. How does your sweet corn look considering how hot it's been?
It looks really good here at the Hort Station, and I know it probably looks really good at Armstrong and a couple of the other farms as well. They are irrigating. Muscatine almost always irrigates. Armstrong usually irrigates. In fact, this year I think all of the farms have had to irrigate at some point in time.
Well, so, last we were talking about, or a couple of weeks ago, we were mm-hmm. talking about pollination concerns considering the very hot temperatures.
Yeah, and that we still have some concerns as well, and we'll have some concerns with that a couple of different places across the state. And we'll just have to wait and see if it actually is productive, because we still got about 3 weeks for some of these field days.
Have you already gotten to try some of the sweet corn?
Not yet.
Is there anything you're particularly excited about?
Well, I'm particularly excited about all of them. They're all kind of this augmented type. We have one called Gourmet Sweet, one called Extra Tender, and one called Miria, and we have two different kind of cultivars of each. I love sweet corn, and I like the sweeter, the better. So I can't wait to taste any of them, just to see if they are this kind of super, super sweet.
Right, we chose varieties that should mature, hopefully, at the time of the demo mm-hmm. garden.
Field days.
But you never know as far as weather, so they might be ahead of schedule, they might be behind schedule. It's hard to...
Or if this pollination concerns really happen, right. They may not make as much as right. we had predicted. So,
are there any of the new things that you tried out in the garden this year that you're particularly excited about that have worked out really well, at least in Gilbert?
The foliage plants have looked really good, and as we expected them to, and that includes things like purple basil, amaranth, which always looks good. And it's been a really pretty good year for some things like amaranth because it's been so dry. They usually don't do well when it gets wet. I put in a red leaf cotton at each of the stations. So it's a foliage plant that will produce a cotton, hopefully if it has a long enough season. And some other kind of unusual kind of foliage plants. I think castor bean is in there as well. Mm-hmm. Looks pretty good. We were talking about beforehand, there's one foliage plant called jealousy that isn't doing so well. It's kind of a small, it's not growing as well as we expected and just maybe not performing as well. So, but I think everything else in that and the compact plants are doing very well.
We have put up a link on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio, to the brochure about all of the different field days. If somebody wants to attend one of these field days, do they have to register? What do they need to do?
They do not have to register. It's free and open to the public. They just need to show up for the evening of the event. It starts off July 24th in Rock Rapids at 6 p.m. and runs through really about the first week or 10 days of August, I think from August 2nd through August 11th. At all the different farms. They're usually in the evening. The Nashua Farm or the North East Farm is at 4 p.m. on August the 11th. And all you have to do is find the farm. You can go to the website, check out the date, and show up at the allotted time. And then it usually starts right on time, and we kind of walk through the garden. And usually I let people take some things home so that they can try it.
And the one at the Horticulture Research Station is a little bit earlier. That's coming up on July 23rd.
That's the fruit and vegetable field day. There's another one at the Horticulture Station for the home demonstration garden on August 8th.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, then.
So they guess we hit that one twice.
All right. And again, we have put up a link to the brochure on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio, so you can take a look for yourself. And coming up in just a moment, we'll answer your questions about your yard and garden. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can leave a question on our Facebook page. With me today, Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture and Cindy Haynes, an associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me are Cindy Haynes, an associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron from ISU Extension Horticulture, here to answer your questions today. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to start off with Lori from Columbus Junction. Hello, Lori.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What's your question?
Okay, I actually have two. Number one, I'm a seed saver and I plant heirloom, and I don't hear you talking about heirloom seeds. Do you not plant these in your garden? And then the other comment was, I'm trying to grow blueberries and nectarines, and I'm not having any luck.
As far as the heirloom, we did have a really nice display of heirloom tomatoes a few years ago at the home demonstration garden, and they're beautiful. We had the green zebra, the Cherokee purple, even the Wapsipinicon peach, which has some ties to Iowa. And I think they're wonderful selections and great things to have in a garden.
All right, so and then on to the blueberries.
Okay, as far as blueberries, we can grow those in Iowa, but they do need two things. They need a well-drained soil. That's imperative. They also need an acid soil, which we don't have. So you have to amend the soil. And the best way of doing that is if you're only planting a few plants, dig a wide shallow hole, take half that soil from the hole, and then mix that with an equal amount of sphagnum peat moss.
Okay.
And then backfill with that 50-50 mix of soil and peat moss. And that should effectively lower the pH. In following years, I would sprinkle a little bit of ammonium sulfate around the plants each spring. The ammonium supplies nitrogen, and the sulfate is sulfur, which basically keeps it acidic.
Okay.
And when we have dry periods like this year, the blueberries have a very shallow fibrous root system. So you'll probably have to water periodically when it's extremely dry. I would mulch those with wood chips or wood shavings to conserve the moisture. But when we have prolonged dry periods, you'll probably have to water maybe once a week or so.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Lori. Next up, let's go to Jenny on the line in Forest City. Hi, Jenny.
Good morning, thank you. Say, I have some pink flowering almond bushes that we got 5 summers ago. I planted them underneath our bay window. The first winter, the rabbits ate them to the ground, but last year they were absolutely stunning. This year, one died out over the winter, and then the second one kind of slowly died out over the spring. The third one remains gorgeous, and they're, you know, they're all next to each other. Are they short-lived or temperamental, or can I replant with another one of those bushes, or should I try something new?
Yeah, they tend to be somewhat short-lived. They look really nice when they're in bloom. The rest of the year, they're kind of a nondescript plant, but when they're in bloom, they're very striking. As far as the site, just make sure it's a well-drained soil, that it drains well, and gets at least 6 hours of direct sun. They don't really like wet soils. They don't really like clay soils, but if it's a well-drained soil, they get plenty of sunlight, they should be okay.
Okay, so the one that died out first is by a downspout. That was probably not a good spot to put it.
Well, that may be a factor, yes, especially in the wintertime. If it stays wet, it may lead to a root rot of some type.
Okay, okay. Okay, thank you very much for the information.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Jenny. And next up is Mark in Des Moines. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Quick question about my lawn. Over the last 4 to 5 weeks, as the lawn has become toast, I'm getting all sorts of tree seedlings that are either currently germinating or germinated last year and put down deeper tap roots, and now they're coming up, or maybe I've mowed them down previously, but I've got them all over the yard, all sorts of different species. What would be the best way to control those? Could I use, like, weed be going on them, or how do I control that?
Well, these are our volunteers. They're not suckers coming up from a tree.
Exactly. Right, okay. They're scattered throughout the lawn.
Okay. Now, if they're just volunteers, not suckers coming up from trees in the yard, what I would do is probably go out and cut them off with a pruning shears, and then apply Roundup directly to the cut surface, and that should kill them. But make sure they're not suckers coming up from a tree in your yard. Earlier this week, I have a honey locust, and it does sucker throughout the backyard, and I spent about 2 hours cutting off the suckers because I don't have to mow the yard, but the suckers were growing, and I did that. But they are definitely suckers from that tree.
And one of those suckers was how far away?
It was actually in the front yard and the trees in the backyard.
Right.
And so in that case, if I applied Roundup to those suckers, that might actually kill the tree. So make sure these are strictly volunteers. They're not suckers coming up from a good tree. And then just cut them off and apply Roundup to the cut surface.
Okay. When you say because of the number of them, do you actually have to use pruning shears or could I just mow them? Is that close enough if I just mow them?
Well, you could, but the problem is if you mow them, it's not usually that nice clean cut that you want with like a pruning shears.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so you may not get that much absorption of the Roundup.
And mowing them wouldn't just kill them?
No, not if they're volunteer trees. I think it would eventually, because I see volunteer trees periodically too. And if you prune those off on a regular basis, oftentimes they eventually give up. Oftentimes they do.
Okay. Another quick question. A number of these, though, are not from trees that I have in my yard, so those obviously would not be suckers, right? Those are seeds.
Right, right.
Okay, and then also probably 20% of them are conifers, and those wouldn't be volunteers.
No,
either,
no.
Would they?
No, no. Okay. Certain trees do tend to sucker. For example, crab apples, many of those tend to sucker. Also, some of the cherries, choke cherries, tend to sucker.
Yeah.
Sumacs tend to sucker. Poplars tend to sucker. And so there are a few trees that tend to do that. But, for example, things like oaks and maples and lindens, they typically don't sucker a great deal.
Okay. Could I ask another quick question about a Japanese maple?
Sure, okay. Briefly.
Okay. Last spring, I had a Japanese maple that had leaf damage during that quick cold snap, lost about 20% of its leaves. I've noticed here over the last week that the remaining leaves are becoming slightly discolored.
Okay.
Is that just general distress, or does that need attention?
Well, I think what may be occurring there is that the tree probably is in kind of poor health or condition. And I think what may be occurring is the hot, dry weather of recent weeks is putting additional stress on that tree, and that tree is having a hard time coping with all these stresses. So one thing you might want to do is go ahead and maybe water that tree, and really water it well, and maybe do so every week or 10 days.
Okay. Mark, thanks a lot for your call. And next up is Dale in Linn County. Hi, Dale.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Say, last year, I planted some of the thornless blackberries. The exact cultivar escapes me, but I've got beautiful big blackberries that are, you know, like the size that they've been putting out in the stores, you know, that are clearly, you know, double or triple the size of a wild blackberry. So they're really nice, but the patch is turning into a jungle from these from this year's growth. Now,
mm-hmm.
the flowering and the fruiting all appears to be on that original last year's growth, you know, the first year, and so all the berries are real close down near the ground because that was how much they grew last year as they were establishing. But now this year, in addition to getting a nice crop of fruit, although you got to wind your way through the jungle to get it, I'm getting 6 and 8 feet
mm-hmm.
of growth on these canes. And whether I choose to train them or not train them, my question really is just, will those be fruiting canes next year? Or because it seems like I kind of forget the terms between phytocanes and floricanes and all that stuff.
Right.
But I mean, basically this, it seems like they want to flower and fruit on second year wood, and this big stuff that's going on this year will be the second year wood next year. Are they
right.
going to fruit on those big canes next year?
Right. Most of your raspberries and your blackberries, the canes live 2 years. And for most of them, the first year, the growth is strictly vegetative. Does
right.
not produce any fruit. Now, if that cane survives the winter, then the following year, that cane produces fruit and then dies. So the canes, they live basically 2 years, okay? Now, what you might want to do is, since they're getting so tall, what you might want to do is, on the new growth, when they get about maybe, let's say, 4 feet tall or so, maybe go out there and pinch off the growing point. Remove the upper 2 or 3 inches of each cane or shoot. That way, they'll develop some side branches, but they won't get to be maybe 6, 7, 8 foot tall.
Okay, and they're not 6 or 8 feet tall. What they did is they came up 3.5, 4 feet, and then they flopped over.
Okay, they
six
did.
8 feet long.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe go ahead, and when they get maybe 3 feet tall, maybe 4 feet tall, just remove that growing point so they don't
okay,
flop over.
Okay, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that working in future years. But that's real interesting to me, though. I mean, because of the amount of vegetative growth I've got right now, I should be able to you know, with a decent winter, I know they're a little touchy, maybe a little more zone 5 than zone 4, these seedless or thornless blackberries. But if they make it through the winter, I could potentially have a huge crop
right,
next
and
year.
Right, and that is the key, that if we have a more typical Iowa winter, they may winter kill partially or quite severely.
Okay.
This past winter was a very mild winter, so they should be doing well this year. But if we have more of a typical Iowa winter, you may see quite a bit of dieback on those.
But if we okay. get another mild winter, then we expect blackberry jam next year, because I think you might have a lot.
In the studio?
Hey, one more quick thing about that first caller that was talking about blueberries. I grow blueberries, and I do pretty well with elemental sulfur for keeping the keeping the pH down.
Right.
But as far as cultivars, it seems to me that I'd have no success whatsoever with the northern blueberries cultivars. What seems to work good is what, rightly or wrongly, what I call like the Indiana blueberry cultivars, and what seems to work good right here in eastern Iowa is Patriot and Blue Crop.
Okay.
Seem to be two good ones that produce big berries and seem to get along with our heavier soils and stuff. So,
all right, thanks for the recommendation, Dale. And next up, we have Mackie on the line in Stone City. Hi, Mackie.
Hello. Good morning to all.
Hi. What's your question?
I have a couple questions about the garden. And this first one kind of follows the last fellow that was asking about the blackberries. I have a lot of vining plants like strawberries and melons and squash. And they're really going to town. But I wonder if at a certain point, if I want larger melons, for example, should I pinch the ends of those vining plants off to kind of let them give all their energy to the fruit now, or if I should let them continue to grow and maybe just pinch off some of the flowers?
Right. The size of the fruit mainly is determined by the genetics of the variety and weather conditions. But you maybe can get slightly bigger fruit if you go ahead maybe and remove some of the small fruit, okay, so that there are only a certain number of fruit on the actual vine. For example, when you're trying to grow a giant pumpkin, okay, you're basically going to remove all but one pumpkin per plant or vine. So all that plant's energy goes into that pumpkin, so it can get very big. But if you have, like, muskmelon, watermelon, you might increase the size somewhat, a little bit, by removing maybe some of the fruit so there's just a few left on that vine.
Okay, so leave the ends of them, keep growing, because
right.
then that would go to the fruit.
Right, because the foliage
okay.
manufactures food, and some of that food is used to grow the actual fruit.
Is that the same with strawberries, too, as they're setting out their runners?
Not a great deal. As far as size, that's mainly weather and genetics. You really can't do much to increase the size. If you want a big berry, buy a variety that produces a big berry. For example, All-Star is a strawberry that produces a big berry. And as far as production-wise, make sure, for example, if you have a June-bearing strawberry, that you're watering once a week right now, because the flower buds on the June-bearing strawberries begin to form in summer and early fall.
Oh, really?
And so if you have extremely dry conditions in late summer, early fall, and you don't water, then it may not be forming very many flower buds. So to get a good crop next June, I'd be watering about once a week at this time of year.
Huh, I didn't know that. Okay, here's my most important question, though.
Mm-hmm.
My corn is tasseling,
mm-hmm.
but the silk has not emerged. Is there a way to force it into silking?
Well, usually the tassel comes first and the silks come later, so that's okay. Just make sure, what I would do is, if it's dry again, go ahead and water, because extremely hot, dry conditions may interfere with pollination. And so I don't think you're going to have a problem as far as, I think the silks will come out. There should be no problem there. But just to make sure you have good pollination, I would go ahead and maybe water really deeply once a week or so that when the silks do come, you have good pollination.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Mackie. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. We have a lot of email questions to get through, too. This is from Nicole in Ankeny. I'd like to know if I can kill crabgrass now, and if I can, what would you suggest I use?
Well, the only way you can do that now is to pull it out or dig it up. There's not a herbicide that would effectively kill it at this point. So if it's in your yard, the only way to get rid of it would be to pull it out or dig it up. You can put on a pre-emergent next spring. Typically here in central Iowa, between April 15th and May 1. And a pre-emergent would prevent the crabgrass seed from germinating next spring.
Well, and this year, if it's green, that seems like a really good thing, doesn't it?
But I must say, even the crabgrass that I have seen is kind of shriveling a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's so dry.
Even it's stressed.
So,
all right.
Which is amazing.
It is. It's remarkable. Queen Anne's lace seems to be doing very well, though.
Yes, it does.
All right. We have to take a break here. We'll be back to answer more questions in just a moment. The number to call is 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Cindy Haynes is an associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Duran is a horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Richard Geron from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture, and Cindy Haynes, an associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. And you can call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to get through a few more of these emails right now. Matt sent this in from Mitchellville. He says, I planted two grapevines this spring, but have yet to stake or prune them. They both seem to have two main stems coming off the main trunk, and I've just let them do their thing this year. Mm-hmm. At this point, what should I be doing with regard to pruning and staking?
Basically, nothing. Maybe just tying those to a stake, and you should have like a trellis, hopefully, constructed by next spring. And then next spring, early, I would select the best one of those two sprouts or shoots and tie that to the upper wire on the trellis and cut off the other one.
All right. This next email is from Jason in Humboldt. My tomato plants are green but spindly and the leaves curl. What could be the problem? I've been fertilizing every other day and spraying with a calcium spray twice a week.
I would cut back on the fertilization because if you over-fertilize, that tends to produce a very rapidly growing plant, vigorous plant, but it's actually growing too much. And so I would cut back on that. Maybe water once a week or so, really do it well when you do it. And as far as fertilization, maybe every 2 to 4 weeks.
All right. We are going through these fast. Kathy sent this in. She says, just for fun this year, I'm trying to grow pumpkins. They have enough sun, but I don't know how much water to give them. So far, they look pretty good, but do they prefer it on the dry side or evenly moist? If there are any other hints you can give me so the plants have a better chance of producing some pumpkins, I'd appreciate it.
I would water them about once a week if you can. Try to get the hose down where the actual plants are or the vines are, and really give them a nice, deep soaking about once a week.
All right. Ben in Des Moines says, is it okay to prune a decorative pear tree now? I think it's a Bradford, he says.
Okay. Yes, you can. You can actually prune a lot of trees in midsummer. That's perfectly fine. The only one you would not do, basically, are the oaks as a group. They should be pruned in winter.
All right. And our Twitter question here from Michael. All of my potatoes turned yellow and died. No signs of blight. What happened? I'm terribly disappointed.
I would assume they got some type of disease. And so what I would do basically is pull those plants up or dig them up, remove them from the garden and destroy them, and then make a note and plant your potatoes in a different site next spring, somewhere that where they haven't been grown for at least 2 or 3 years.
All right. We got through those quickly. If you have any more questions you'd like to send to email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next up, we'll go to Sandy in West Des Moines. Hi, Sandy.
Good morning. I have two holly plants. They're probably about 11 years old. They're male, female. They're across from each other on a sidewalk. Beautiful foliage, but maybe every 2 years they bear the red berries. And that one is getting huge. What would you suggest?
Well, as far as pruning them, I'd probably do that in the spring, probably around April would be a time to do that. These are both females, or?
I think one's a male, one's a female.
Okay,
yes.
You need both of those, at least one of each. Sometimes you may not get fruit if we have, for example, a late freeze in the spring like this year, where we had freezing temperatures around April 10th, 11th. If you have blooming and then we have a freeze, that may damage or destroy the flowers so they don't bear fruit. So sometimes weather conditions may conspire where you don't have very good fruit set.
I see. I did prune last April, but again, it may have been the freezing conditions that did it. The one, I don't know if it's a male or female, it's absolutely huge. What size do you think I should bring it down? It's about 4 feet wide and high.
Well, you could probably cut it back by maybe, let's say, 20% overall as far as the overall size.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Sandy. And next up, Maria in Iowa City. Hi, Maria. Thanks for your patience.
Hi. Thank you very much. Yes, I wanted to ask about blight, tomato blight, and blossom end rot. I've never seen it before, but I think I may have it. It's a situation where the tomatoes, even the Juliettes, but especially the beefsteak tomatoes, have a flat, sort of dead-looking spot on the bottom, and sometimes that happens before they're even remotely ripe.
Correct. That's referred to as blossom end rot. You have this large, dark brown or black area on the bottom of the fruit. I will say it's much more common early in the season than later in the season. It's caused by a lack of calcium in the developing fruit. The best way to try to guard against that would be to make sure the plants have a fairly even supply of moisture, where they don't go from being very wet to very dry. Just try to keep it consistently moist. I would say, in average, if you water, as far as in the ground, if they're growing in the ground, water every 6-7 days, really soak them nice and deep. I would also remove the fruit that are forming or having this spot on the bottom, because they're going to rot anyway, and you don't want the plant wasting their energy on those fruit. And so I would pick them off and discard them. Also, do not fertilize heavily. Sometimes if you fertilize too much, that tends to encourage blossom end rot, so cut back on that. As far as blight, blights are very common on tomatoes. They're the most common vegetable in the garden, and so they tend to be, as far as foliar diseases, also fairly common. The best way to guard against that is to clean up the debris in the fall when you're done, remove that debris from the garden and destroy it, and then look for a different site every year where you haven't grown tomatoes for at least 2 or 3 years, because these plant pathogens will persist in the soil.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Maria. And next up, let's go to Julie on the line in Manly. Hi, Julie.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I live up by the Mason City area, and we have an acreage. And I have found little wildflowers that have produced out in my woods. And I find just a few of them. And I finally identified them through a catalog from a wildflower farm someplace. And they're called an amethyst shooting star. But I can't find any information on how I would go about propagating them. I noticed that on the very end of the plant itself, it has like these little green berries. But I don't know if I could encourage them to spread around a little bit more, or I can't find any information on them.
Well, I'm not sure of that specific plant. I'm not familiar with that plant. If they have a berry-like fruit, let's say it's green, most that have a berry-like fruit at some point when they're mature, they might turn to be red or white or blue or something of that nature. So okay. Usually when they go from green to a different color, usually that means they're mature. And typically what happens is at that point when they're mature, some animal might eat them. It goes through their digestive system, and then they deposit the seed in various locations. So if they have these fruit, and if they do turn and become a different color, I would assume they are basically mature. And what I would do would be to maybe remove them from the plant and try to maybe squeeze out the seed and plant the seeds in the ground somewhere.
Very shallowly, probably?
Right. If the seed is quite small, probably maybe a quarter inch deep or something of that nature.
It's the size of a little pea, maybe a little baby pea. That's
okay.
What they look like.
So maybe a quarter, maybe a half inch deep.
Make sure you mark the location so you know when they come up, hopefully next spring, so that you can make sure that you can even check how your germination happens.
What about trying division? Can you do that with a wildflower like that?
Boy, since I'm not familiar with it, I probably would not suggest that. But
I haven't dug it up because I was just afraid that if I did that I mm-hmm. could kill it. And so, but this is the first year I've seen these little berries come on.
Now, many of the seeds of wildflowers and trees and shrubs, many of those have to go through
winter
before they can germinate. So being in the ground, they're exposed to the cool temperatures, the moisture, and then so that meets their requirement, so they should sprout the following spring.
Okay. I just cannot find any other information on them, and because they are just so unusual looking. They are just gorgeous from what I've seen. It took me, you know, several seasons to finally identify what they were. But this is, like I said, the first year I've seen the little berries on them. So I will give that a try.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you so much.
Good
mm-hmm.
luck with that. Next up is Jason in Waterloo. Hi, Jason.
Hi. I had a question about garlic. I believe I picked it too late, and I've heard that the cloves are not edible if you do that. Or what you tell me about that?
Well, it should be edible, even though it's maybe late as far as picking it. Typically, we would harvest the garlic when the tops basically fall over and begin to dry, just like onions.
Okay.
And then at that point, we can dry them and then store them indoors. And with our early spring this year, things are kind of maturing much sooner than normal. And so they may be already doing that at this point, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Jason. Next up is Tom in Carroll County. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call. I'm in Carroll County. I've got red oaks, small 8-footers or so,
mm-hmm.
and I've got wilt on the leaves. And I've been using a fungicide, and that was what I was told to try. How often should I do that, spray those trees?
I really don't think you have to. Now, when were they planted?
2 years ago.
Okay, what I would be doing is, if you've planted a tree in 2012 or 2011, okay, those trees have very small root systems, and I'd be watering those trees every week or 10 days and really soak them well, okay? It has been so dry that these younger trees, they don't have a really good root system. They are suffering quite a bit. So I would go ahead and really water those trees really, really well every 7 to 10 days. If you have trees in the 3 to 5 year age, I'd be probably watering those too. It's not as critical for the recently planted trees, but I'd probably water those too. And those trees that have been in the ground for at least 5 years, they probably should be okay. They can probably tolerate the hot, dry conditions, but anything planted recently, I'd probably water.
Okay, good. Thanks a lot. One other question quick. Would you fertilize these young trees that are 2 years in the ground?
I would not. We don't typically have to at all because most Iowa soils are quite fertile, and they can get everything they need directly from the soil. The one thing they can't get is water, especially this year.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Cindy in Waterloo. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I got, I believe it's a bur oak tree. The top part of the tree, the main part of the tree, just died. I think it was like the frost that we had or something. I don't know what killed it. But there is suckers coming up. Can I let those grow, like one of those suckers to grow, and just cut the big part, the other part off?
Now, how big is the tree?
It's about 4 foot. I've had it planted 2 years.
Okay, 4 foot. And the top has died.
Yeah.
I think what I'd probably do is just leave it for the present time. And then go out next spring as it begins to leaf out, and then prune out basically what's not leafing out, and then select what you consider to be the best sucker as far as vigor and maybe size-wise. Mm-hmm. Leave that one and take off the rest.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And next we will go to Denny in Ankeny. Hi, Denny.
Hi. I live in a new housing development area, and I think the developers took off all the topsoil and left clay. I put in a raised vegetable garden this past spring. It's only 4 inches deep. And my produce all grew, but like the beets came up, but there's no beets under the ground. The onions aren't any bigger than they were when I planted them. The beans came up, and I think I maybe harvested 10 beans. So I'm wondering if the soil was deep enough, or I'm not sure what's going on. Everything's growing, but nothing's producing.
Well, what I would probably do is maybe this fall, maybe get some compost or some additional organic matter, like barnyard manure, and work that into the existing soil and go down several inches deep, like 6, 7, 8 inches, and work that organic matter into the upper 6, 7, 8 inches of your existing soil. So you have a better, deeper soil, and hopefully they'll produce better. Now, as far as the beets, make sure you thin those once they come up so that they can develop into a nice root. Otherwise, they tend to be quite small.
All right, Denny, thanks a lot for your call. And John is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, John.
Hello. My question's about garlic. You still there?
Yep.
Okay, I'm on a cell phone. It's cutting in and out. I didn't break the scapes off my garlic this year that came up in last year's bed. And I let it go to a flower, and then it turned into sort of a bulb with corn-like seeds inside. I'm wondering if I can plant those seeds to start the garlic.
Those are probably little bulblets or kernlets, and you can take those off and plant those and see what they do. Yes,
it may take them more than one season to be large enough and recognizable. But as
would it be like onion starts?
Somewhat similar to that, right? So I would just take them off, plant them this fall, plant them fairly shallow, cover them with some straw, and then see what they do next spring.
Just like regular cloves, then.
Right? Right.
Okay. Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, John. Thanks a lot for your call, and we are out of time. Cindy Haynes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes is an associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. And again, if you'd like more information about the field days we talked about earlier in the show, you can go to our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Alyssa Weiss in Ames. I'm Charity Nebbe. Monday on the show, the Iowa Opera House Project. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.